The Vista Tower developer cuts deals with both St. Regis Hotels and Alinea Restaurant Group. And we'll talk with Matthew Lee Erlbach. Originally a Chicagoan, he wrote a film that recently debuted on Netflix, and he's also working with lawmakers to champion a comprehensive relief bill for the arts and culture sector, citing the significant but often under-discussed economic impact of the arts.
Creatively, we're the heart and soul of Chicago, of Illinois, and of this nation. We are the very expression of democracy.
I'm Amy Guth, and this is Crane's Daily Gist. It's Wednesday, November 25th. In these uncertain times, it's important to have people you trust by your side. When 11,000 local business owners needed a payment protection program loan, they turned to their Wintrust banker to secure funding, because that's a relationship they can count on. Businesses are navigating some of the biggest challenges they will ever face. Wintrust is here to answer their calls. They'll answer yours, too. Start the conversation at wintrust.com/dailygist. Member FDIC. I'm joined now by Matthew Lee Erlbach. He wrote a film called We're the Champions that recently debuted on Netflix. Originally a Chicagoan, he's also one of the co-organizers of the Art Hero campaign and is working with lawmakers on a comprehensive relief bill for the arts and culture sector, which he says is $877 billion of the U.S. economy, or 4.5% of GDP. Welcome. So glad you could take the time to talk today. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Amy. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell me about this campaign effort and the Dawn Act that you're working on.
So what the Dawn Act does is it authorizes existing agencies in our government $43.85 billion. And this is including the SBA. And Dawn comprehensively is a relief and recovery bill looking to meet the moment and look ahead at what the challenges are nationally and locally. And it's making the arts economy and arts and cultural workers a cornerstone of our American recovery. And this comes from Be an Arts Hero. And what our organization has been doing is mobilizing coalitions around the country in every arts and culture discipline, region, and sector. So whether you're a dance worker, opera worker, theater worker, museum worker, or work in cultural spaces, that 4.5%, that $877 billion that you named, which, by the way, that's a number that comes from the Bureau of Economic Analysis, we want to embrace the entire arts and culture sector behind a relief and recovery plan that meets the size and scale of the problem.
When you say relief and recovery, what are the individual pieces of that? What does that look like? The recovery part in particular, I think we've talked a lot this year about relief and all of the forms that it takes. What are the recovery pieces?
Sure. Well, recovery is jobs and infrastructure. We are laborers. The intellectual, creative, and physical labor of arts and culture workers drive at least $30 billion in Illinois' economy. That's $2.25 billion impact just in the Loop and the city of Chicago. So we are an economic force. We're an economic force because we are intersectional with other industries. We create and sustain a highly interdependent commercial ecosystem, which includes hospitality, retail, tourism, transportation. And so when we are working, when our institutions are flourishing, our communities are flourishing, and all our arts-adjacent businesses are flourishing. I mean, we're buying our lumber from Crafty Beaver and Home Depot and so forth. So what the recovery aspect of this looks like is really a jobs and infrastructure plan. It is fiscal hard power, and it's also political soft power. It is what attracts people back to our cities and back to our communities, back to Macomb and Waukegan and Champaign-Urbana and Rockford and Chicago, and back to the United States of America. This will revitalize our reputation. So a jobs and infrastructure program, again, is not only economic hard power, it is democratic soft power.
And as you have been talking with lawmakers about the Dawn Act, how is that part going? You know, I know the timing is terrible for everything right now, but are lawmakers open to it, or have you been met with resistance?
I think everyone is looking to find a solution to the problem right now. I mean, you know, we've heard everything from something is going to happen in the next 35 minutes to, oh, well, nothing is happening for the next 2 weeks. So we've been racing this calendar that keeps changing. And in the meantime, we've just been going and meeting with everyone in the House and in the Senate that we can. And what we find in these offices is there is a reception to our proposal because we are solving a problem. And we are solving a problem in a way that addresses the human infrastructure of the arts and culture economy. There's a lot of really great proposals out there, and we are yes-anding all of them. There's Save Our Stages, there's Calmer, there's Place, there's Create, there's Hits. All of these proposals that are currently out there address the problem in some way. And so we want to make sure that our legislators know what these proposals are and can metabolize them in the next package. So everyone's receptive because in every state, we drive at least $1 billion in arts and culture in every single state. So where that's, you know, $1.9 billion in Alaska, it's $30 billion in Illinois, $46 billion in Texas, $230 billion in California. We are big business because we're local business.
And these numbers you're naming, they're really pretty staggering, especially when we start comparing arts and culture to like the airline industry or agriculture and mining. So in terms of economic output, in terms of overall percentage of GDP, is it maybe a cultural reluctance to prioritize arts and culture as a sector, or maybe even not recognize it as a big collective force? Or is it just kind of lack of awareness around the size of the industry?
Yes, all of that. I mean, this starts from childhood on. When arts education isn't integrated and arts appreciation, arts and culture appreciation isn't integrated into the fabric of our education and our learning, we don't become patrons, consumers, and citizens of the arts. And so it starts very young. You know, ask anyone how they got through this pandemic, and a good percentage will have watched Netflix, will have listened to music, read books, looked at art, at something. That doesn't come from nowhere. And so there needs to be an education, not only about what arts and culture bring to our lives, but also that we are an economic force. And when you understand what the economic impact is, and when you understand that arts and culture is labor, it just so happens to be creative labor, when we can re-educate the nation about who arts workers are, what arts workers are, and where arts workers are, it's not just the people on stage in front of the camera, it's the millions of admin. We're 5.1 million strong, representing 675,000 small businesses across the country. You know, these are stagehands, it's administrators, it's publicists, marketers, it's broadcasters like you. This is all part of arts and culture, it's media, you name it. So there's an education that needs to happen. And by making arts and culture a cornerstone of our American recovery, we will build back better. And by the way, this is not just a blue state thing. This is blue states and red states. We are in every state. Everyone wants us in their communities because we're a jobs multiplier. Our growth rate is 4.16%. That's nearly double that of the economy at large, which is 2.2%. We're a good bet.
So we've been talking about this in national terms and on the state level. What does the size of the arts and culture sector look like if we focus in on just the Chicago area?
Sure. I mean, last numbers in the loop, 15,500 full-time jobs in arts and culture. Illinois as a state, 224,000 jobs, and we're looking at $30 billion added to the state. In Chicago alone, $2.25 billion is the economic impact, and we're looking at $3.2 billion in annual spending and $2 billion in household income to local residents. So what does that look like? That is the Goodman Theater, that's the Museum of Science and Industry, that's Broadway in Chicago, that's the Art Institute, that's Steppenwolf, it's Second City, it's Improv Olympic. All these institutions are stars. And these stars hold in their orbit this highly interdependent commercial ecosystem, which I named before. And if these stars implode, what goes down in that vortex are all these arts-adjacent industries. Now, imagine that happening across the state. You have a constellation of institutions which collapse, and they bring down with it, in its wake, all those other small businesses in the community. That is a galactic economic collapse in Illinois, particularly for Chicago, which, let's be honest, blues, jazz, sketch comedy, film, TV, theater, museums, Chicago is an arts and culture city.
There's a line in the letter that you wrote that I thought really stands out. It's, we are big business because we are local business. I think really, really speaks to that, exactly what you're describing. But in addition to the efforts of the Dawn Act, In addition to the campaign, Be an Arts Hero, what is your vision for what could be happening on the local level? What are the things that people could do kind of in the community organizer sort of sense?
Well, there's a couple things. I think that this is an awakening for our industry. I think that whether you're profit, not profit, whether you're an employer or employee, this affects our industry at large. And part of the reason we're here is because we don't have a seat at the table and we haven't been made a legislative priority. Part of the fix to that is a dedicated department and secretary of arts and culture. We need that. And by having a seat at the table, it allows us locally to know that we have an advocate in our government that is looking out for us and helping economic development strategies to make sure that the creative economy is robust, alive, and kicking in every community in every state. So I think at the local level, the thing that we can do immediately is a lot of citizen work. It's a lot of civic work. It's calling Senator Durbin, calling Senator Duckworth, writing them, Governor Pritzker, Mayor Lightfoot. These are all huge supporters of the arts. Are they supporting everything that they can to make sure that Chicago and Illinois has an economic floor put under them? It's making sure that they know this is a priority for the citizens of Chicago and the state. So at a civic level, it's going to be an artshero.com. We have all the materials that you could ever ask for to get you going and get you civically engaged. And then creatively, we're the heart and soul of Chicago, of Illinois, and of this nation. We are the very expression of democracy. So I would say the more art we can create, the more art we can support, buy local, you know, support local artisans, support local arts workers, the more we can do in our communities to invest in each other, to invest in local storytellers and local arts workers, the better off we're going to be.
I really appreciate you taking the time to talk today. I think this is all really so interesting and so very important. But before I let you go, tell me about the new docuseries that just launched on Netflix.
We Are the Champions. We Are the Champions is about these eccentric competitions and the very lovable, relatable, and human people who compete in them. So everything from cheese rolling, hot chili pepper eating to dog dancing. It's really a show about finding your community. And I think more than anything right now, we are all craving community. And by the way, this Netflix show, We Are the Champions, was created by arts and culture workers. That show is a small business. Every TV show you watch is a small business. So watch the show and support arts and culture workers.
Indeed. Well, people can find that on Netflix, and also be sure to visit beanartshero.com to learn more about this project that we have been discussing today. Matthew Lee Erlbach, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk today.
A real pleasure. Thank you, Amy.
Coming up, retailers prepare for the most virtual Black Friday yet. We'll talk about that and more right after this. Thompson Coburn LLP is a national law firm whose Chicago attorneys have represented some of Chicago's largest public and privately held companies in a variety of corporate and litigation legal matters. Thompson Coburn attorneys deliver exceptional legal guidance to publicly and closely held businesses, financial institutions, and sole and family proprietorships across nearly every major industry and business sector. Thompson Coburn is all about total commitment to its clients, its people, and its community. Remember that your business deserves legal advisors and litigators who are totally committed to your success.
You're listening to Crane's Daily Gist with Amy Guth.
The Vista Tower hasn't even opened yet, and already it's got a new name. Now it'll be called the St. Regis Chicago. After cutting ties with a Chinese hotel chain, the developer of the 101-story luxury skyscraper on Wacker Drive said it reached a deal with St. Regis Hotels and Resorts, which will take over the nearly 200-room hotel in the building. The tower's developer, Chicago-based Magellan, also made a deal with Alinea Group to run the restaurants and bars in the high-rise. And the deals stabilize a project designed by Chicago architect Jeannie Gang that won early praise for its design but then was disrupted by a shakeup in ownership. Magellan's original partner, Dalian Wanda, decided to back out a few years ago, only recently agreeing to sell its 90% stake in the development to Magellan and to partners Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan. Sales of condos in the building have been slow, as buyers have signed contracts for about half of its less than 400 units. And a few condo buyers have even sued to back out, citing the uncertainty over the departure of Wanda. However, the deals with St. Regis and Alinea could make it easier for Magellan to sell the rest of the condos, which range from $1 million to $18.5 million. The building's first residents will move in next month, with construction of the hotel expected to wrap in the third quarter of 2021. But the project is also opening at a tricky time, during both a recession and a pandemic, both of which have impacted the downtown hotel market, which continues to be down from a huge drop in tourism, business travel, and meetings. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot's 2021 budget passed the city council, with her closest vote, that being to raise the property tax levy, passing in a 28-22 vote. The revenue ordinance passed 29-21, and the spending plan passed 33-17. The $12.8 billion pandemic budget, as the mayor's described it, covered a 2021 shortfall of $1.2 billion. The rest of plugging that gap will be accomplished through what's been described as scoop-and-toss light, refinancing and restructuring roughly $1.7 billion in general obligation and sales tax securitization corporation debt. The city expects to net $950 million in near-term budgetary relief to fill holes in both the 2020 and 2021 budgets. And finance officials estimate that when the term of the borrowing wraps up in 2050, the city will end up well-positioned with $31 million in net value after inflation savings. Lightfoot won over some aldermen by striking a deal with union officials to avoid laying off hundreds of city workers, by increasing spending on violence prevention programs by $10 million, and agreeing to test a program that would have mental health workers respond to certain emergency calls rather than police. Other one-time measures include the use of $30 million in rainy day funds, surplusing tax increment financing districts to get $74.1 million, $59 million from sweeping aging revenue accounts, and selling city land. Longer term, aldermen voted to tie future property tax hikes to the Consumer Price Index, which is estimated to raise the levy by roughly $30 million each year. In a bet on the emerging esports industry, the president of Lincolnshire-based development firm ECD and Chicago-based virtual reality gaming company MassVR unveiled plans this week to turn a near Southside property into Chicago's first dedicated stadium for hundreds of spectators to watch professional video game competitions. The proposed venue at 2500 South Wabash, called Surge, would also include a bar and restaurant and space for as many as 80 people to participate in VR games at once in a 25,000-square-foot arena. And the $30 million project is a big bet on esports, which has evolved in recent years into a billion-dollar industry, with events that can draw thousands of in-person spectators and millions online. Advertisers and high-profile investors have increasingly supported the sector, too, as have high schools and colleges, as esports scholarships have become a thing. Plans were presented during a virtual town hall meeting hosted by 3rd Ward Alderman Pat Dowell, who called the proposal cutting edge. The property does need to be rezoned and win city council approval, and developers say they hope to win that approval by May and start construction in the summer, with a plan of opening in 2022. This year, as Chicago has new restrictions in place that cap retailers' capacity, Black Friday is shaping up to look a bit different. But even despite limitations, few stores are expecting long lines of shoppers this year. Instead, they're preparing for the most virtual Black Friday yet, and a major shift in foot traffic. The once very busy shopping day has been slowing down for the past few years as holiday shopping has increasingly shifted online. Now, the pandemic has accelerated that behavior. According to a recent survey from consulting firm Deloitte, more than half of Chicago consumers are anxious about in-store shopping and expect to spend 66% of their budget online. And according to the survey, this is also the first year that more Chicagoans plan to shop on Cyber Monday than on Black Friday. Many retailers started offering holiday sales as early as September and October this year. And about a quarter of consumers have already started their holiday shopping, according to a report from accounting firm PwC. Experts predicted earlier this fall that holiday spending would be down, with many Americans out of work due to the virus. However, confidence has risen in recent weeks. The National Retail Federation expects holiday sales in November and December will increase 3.6% to 5.2% over last year, a total of more than $766 billion. But that's nationwide, and the expectations aren't quite as optimistic with Chicago shoppers. Deloitte's survey found that Chicagoans expect to spend a little over $1,000 per household for the holidays, which is down 32% from last year. And that's Crane's Daily Gist for now. Our continuous news feed lives at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks so much to our guest today, Matthew Lee Erlbach. Be sure to subscribe to these conversations on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your audio on demand. And find hashtag Crane's Daily Gist on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And let's continue talking there about these and other business stories. Our show is produced by Todd Manley at Earsight Studios. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll meet you right back here next time.